This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Back for Ehlers across the line. He got knocked down again. Fans enjoying that. After it goes Pullman. Stick lifted by Ehlers in the slot. Near side for Buffalo. A shot at the post. Rebound. They score! Nikolai Ehlers on the far side. The shot off the post by Buffalo bounced right to him. He sends it into the yawning cage. And it's 3-1 Winnipeg.
Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Dave Manuk and Andrew Brown, joining us for the first time ever on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Andrew, sorry that we had to bring you on at 6 a.m., but, you know, that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah, no, it's no problem.
Like, literally, the cookies actually crumbled in Ezzy's beard right now, so...
Oh, yeah, I pounded, like, four cookies before I got into the car on the way to the show today. Guys, let's get right into the three games here on the road. The Jets are a perfect 3-0. They pick up the big win over the New Jersey Devils. Connor Hellebuck, 41 saves, his franchise record 35th win of the year. Dave, let's start with you. What have you thought, not just of the game against the Devils, but of these first three games on the road trip and the Jets getting all three victories?
I think it's critically important. They were really pedantic to the midpoint of January. They were 10-10 and 6, and since then they've gone 7-0-1 to away from the Bell MTS place. And obviously we know for the most part in February they were in Winnipeg, but the reality is that this is critical to be not just a good team at home, but to also be a good team on the road. And they've now shown that they can win on the road, and again they're doing it without Mark Scheifele. I think it's impressive. I think that Paul Stastny has really fit in. Patrick Laine is a monster right now. I mean, everything the guy touches goes into the back of the net. Nikolai Ehlers is playing well. So, I mean, it appears to me that the team is firing on all cylinders. And again, when you can do that, not just at home, but when you can make hay on the road and bank these points, it's extremely critical. Now, Nashville happens to be like on the craziest hot streak ever, having won 10 straight. So you're not necessarily obviously overtaking them, but you're maintaining your pace with them and you're increasing or maintaining your lead over a team like Minnesota, who's also actually been playing well and is trying to catch you in that second spot. So I think the Jets are doing exactly what they need to do, that they're playing very well on the road. And again, they're doing so without guys like Adam Lowry, Jacob Trouba, Mark Scheifele. You know, the list kind of goes on and on. And you know, sure, they're getting a couple guys back here and there, but when you can do this without your top center, it's a pretty impressive feat.
Andrew, I want to get your thoughts on Patrick Laine, who's obviously on the 10-game heater right now, but what were your thoughts on the new line combinations? Because Mark Scheifele, as we all know, did not play against the New Jersey Devils. He's not going to play this afternoon against the Philadelphia Flyers, so Brian Little moves back into the 1C slot alongside his good buddy Blake Wheeler, who he's played with for many years going back to the Atlanta Thrashers days. What did you think of that, how that number one line looked, and what did you think of how the other lines looked? Obviously, the Stastny line, a Ehlers line, stayed together.
Yeah, no, the Stastny line's has been on fire. You know, ever since he came over to the Winnipeg Jets in that trade, and I really do like the first line still. Like you said, Wheeler has played with Little, you know, quite a few times in the past, and yeah, no, I think it's a very solid line. There's definitely some chemistry there that's built up over the past few seasons. You know, even without Mark Scheifele, I think that the Jets are they're going to be safe again. You know, it wasn't too obvious that he was even out of the lineup at the time. I mean, they racked up, you know, quite a few wins even without him. I definitely like the Perreault line too. You know, as Rick Ralph calls him, the human jumper cable, and I think he's going to be a good fit as well on that third line right now.
Dave, what did you think of that top line? Because we know that Brian Little has struggled offensively this year, and really, with the exception of Patrick Laine, Paul Stastny, and Nikolai Ehlers, the Jets were struggling to create offense a little bit in that game.
Yeah, you know what, and to me it's a function of taking a little bit of time. You know, as Andrew just touched on, this is a Blake Wheeler, Brian Little combo that we've seen many times before throughout the years, but the fact is they haven't played a lot over the last year together, obviously, and so it does take a little bit of time to kind of reform that chemistry and to change the way you've been playing, because Brian Little has grown accustomed to different line mates, so he's now, you know, has to play a faster game because he's on with two of the fastest guys on the team in Cal Connor and Blake Wheeler. So that obviously changes the way that he, you know, has to center that line. And so I was curious to, you know, before the game began in New Jersey, I was curious to see how that line combo would work or kind of how they would work as a trio. And I thought it was okay. Like, again, the reality is right now with the way the Stastny, Ehlers, Line A line is going, you can kind of afford to have the other lines not firing at the same rate just because that line is playing so well together. But I suspect, you know, now that they've had that kind of game under their belt, we should see a different, probably a more aggressive, more assertive top line with Wheeler, Line A, and Wheeler, Little, and Kyle Connor.
And boys, we can't talk about Thursday night's game and not talk about Zane Kalemba. I mean, the circumstances leading up to that game were truly incredible. We knew that Mark Scheifele was not going to play, and we assumed that Steve Mason was going to back up Connor Hellebuyck, mm-hmm. because Paul Maurice let everyone know the day before that Connor Hellebuyck was starting. And then Steve Mason, who has the worst luck of probably any hockey player anywhere right now, is injured prior to the game, can't go. And then you assume, okay, Michael Hutchinson is going to, you know, jump on a 747, not a 747, but he'll jump on a plane and fly out to New Jersey, and he's going to back up Connor Hellebuyck. Misses his flight, or the flight is delayed, I believe. And Zane Kalemba is the man that gets picked to back up Connor Hellebuyck. So what did you think about the way the Jets dealt with the circumstances? No Scheifele, you know, having Zane Kalemba back up Connor Hellebuyck, just, you know, kind of battling that adversity with some injured bodies out and, you know, having an unfamiliar goalie. And also just what a great story it is for Zane Kalemba. He gets to play one period as a member of the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tremendous story. And it's one of those situations where, you know, you never want to see a guy go out. And Steve Mason, as you said, nobody was really sure. Like, we saw that he had left the practice. So you're thinking, okay, did something happen to him in practice? Then Coach Maurice comes out and says that it actually occurred during the game he was playing against the Rangers. So you're like, okay, well, what happened? Because he finished that game. But then, so it obviously occurred something, tweaked it, went on the ice, you know, because they had the day off on Wednesday, goes on the ice on Thursday, not feeling well, comes off, you know, early in practice, and the Jets start scrambling. And of course, you know, like you said, as they signed Zane Kalemba, and, you know, that was kind of you're right, it became a fun storyline of a guy who played 14 years ago with Blake Wheeler in the USHL, and you know, he's one of the three or four guys at the New Jersey Devils, kind of in the New Jersey Devils area, that if teams ever need an emergency backup, he gets the phone call, or he's one of the guys who will get a phone call. And sure, you know, it's one of those, it's very interesting, right? He gets signed to a PTO, and you're sitting there going, if something happens to Connor Hellebuyck, it's Zane Kalemba's net. It's not like you're going to be like, okay, well, hold on a second, we got to get somebody else. So that's the interesting thing to me, is that there is, you never know what could happen. I mean, this is a possibility that this guy could be playing. And, you know, his last professional hockey, I believe, was 4 years prior, playing for Manchester. So this is a guy who hadn't really played professional hockey. I mean, I'm sure he's still playing at some level recreationally, but he's not a professional hockey player in the last few years, which I think is interesting, actually. I think it's an interesting situation. To me, it's like, if you're going to sign someone, shouldn't it be someone who is still playing at a somewhat high level? Because you are in a situation where if this guy goes down, if your number one goes down, then this guy has to go in the net for you.
But it's a rent-a-goalie situation. It's no different, right, than if you're in the Highlander League and your regular goalie is out, right?
Yes.
You have to go on
you
the list.
You have to pray Rick Ralph is somewhere in the building.
Yeah. If Rick Ralph is unavailable, then you have to go to the next person on the list, and it's Zane Kalemba.
Yeah.
And I thought one of the best things about Zane Kalemba was that before the game started, social media was obviously blowing up, and everyone was trying to figure out, who is Zane Kalemba? Everyone's going on Hockey DB. Everyone's trying to figure out what number he's going to wear. And it was super awesome, you know, seeing him out there. And Blake Wheeler, who he has a prior relationship with, was kind of calming him down. Guys, I want to get your thoughts on Mark Scheifele and how the Jets are going to deal with him being out of the lineup here for the rest of the road trip. I want to play a very short clip here of Paul Maurice from yesterday, Dave, talking about Mark Scheifele's injury and how there is a chance that we might not see him for the next three games on this road trip.
Mark Scheifele won't play tomorrow.
Will not play tomorrow. Making improvement. Be real, real careful with this one. We just don't want anything to linger on this. Where he's in and out of lineup for a week or two. We'll wait until he's right.
Paul Maurice doesn't necessarily say, guys, that Scheifele isn't going to play on this road trip, but if you kind of read into what he's saying, you know, he's saying, you know, we got to be careful here. You know, you kind of, you know, put two and two together, and most likely you won't see Scheifele in those back-to-back games against the Caps and the Predators. Andrew, you mentioned earlier the Jets should be okay without Scheifele, and I agree with you. You look at the Jets' record when Scheifele was out earlier, when he went out, late December against the Oilers, so he was out for the entire month of January, and then he came back in February. Do you like Brian Little staying at that first-line center role, or do you maybe move Blake Wheeler to center if it turns out that Scheifele is going to be out a little bit longer than maybe we thought?
Well, I definitely think it's maybe a bit of an experiment right now, just having a little backup with Wheeler on the first line. I think they'll definitely test it out for the first few games, but you might see Blake Wheeler slide right back into the middle spot. You could see Matthew Perreault hop up there again. Maybe Jack Roslovic slides into the right side as well.
And by the way, Andrew, I didn't think there was a chance that Blake Wheeler could move back to center. And
no,
by the
me
way,
neither.
He's not going to play center today versus the Philadelphia Flyers, but the way that line has been clicking as of late, they haven't been producing a lot offensively at 5-on-5, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that, you know, Kyle Connor's not a great player and Blake Wheeler's not a great player and Brian Little's not a great player, but right now, I mean, that line is not driving the bus offensively. It's the Stastny line.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think this is a situation where you can afford to have a little bit of a lull and, you know, like I said, reforming of this chemistry. We'll see today. Today will be an interesting test for that line against a good Philly line. But, you know, Paul Maurice was talking about it or asked about it earlier in the week, just about what this affords him, the ability to have this kind of depth now where opposition coaches have to plan against not just one top line, but really a number of top lines. So it's a pick-your-poison sort of situation. Do you want, you know, this is more when Scheifele's in the lineup, and then you have Little, and then you have three really nice lines that can score. You know, who do you have to game plan against? Well, the reality is you kind of have to game plan against everyone, but the truth is that you've only got so many shut down defense, and you've only got so many top pairing defense. So the reality is that you know that one of your lines is going to have an easier matchup. You know, again, this does remove from that depth, but at the same time, like, who are we kidding? Brian Little isn't exactly, a poor top center. I mean, you know, obviously he's not what he was a few years ago, but the guy still can get it done, and he's still pretty much underrated in my books around the league. So for what he's able to do, so to me. Again, like I said, I just think it's a function of giving those guys a bit of time to kind of reform that chemistry. And today's game, I think, will be an easy, interesting experiment in that kind of scenario.
One final note on the first three games of this road trip. Benny Sherratt's point streak continues, picks up an assist against the New Jersey Devils. So he's on a 5-game point streak. Great to see for the defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets. We're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about Dustin Byfuglien. I want to know if you guys think Buff is playing too much. He's been averaging about 25 or 26 minutes a game with Jacob Trouba out of the lineup. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Back toward the line here for Morrissey. Back to the far side again for Armia. Armia controlling the puck. Back for Morrissey. Morrissey back door on the far side. They score! Dustin Byfuglien with a chip shot to the net. And it's 3-1 Winnipeg. How about that puck possession by the Jets?
We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It is still very, very, very early. What time did you guys get up today, by the way?
About 17 different times. I woke up at midnight, then 1, then 2, then about 4 o'clock, and finally at 5.
So I set my cell phone alarm
I had two phones going just in case.
Did you actually have two phones going?
Oh, yeah.
So I had one phone going. The alarm was set for 20 to 5. And then I woke up at 4:15, and you know you get that feeling, you're like, I'm going to have to get up
just
in
get
20
up.
Minutes. Yeah, just get up. Don't even try to fight this. So I just got up. So that was probably the earliest I've ever been up in my entire life. That includes for getting up for flights.
I had the phone on one side and my alarm clock on the other side, the surround sound alarm clock going on to make sure I would be up on time for the show.
And we appreciate it, Andrew.
No, no problem.
Believe me. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Guys, this segment, I want to talk about Buff. because I think we'd all agree that Dustin Byfuglien has been one of the Jets' best defensemen here, especially since Jacob Trouba went out with an injury. In the 17 games since Trouba last played, Buff has 3 goals and 15 assists for 18 points, so he's over a point a game. And I want to go over his ice time here, and then I want to ask you guys if you think Buff is playing too much or if you think Buff is completely fine and he's able to play these big minutes. Because I think he is able to play these big minutes, but I do worry a little bit about, as we get closer to the playoffs, if Buff is going to be able to play this much. So in the game against the Devils, Buff was up to 28 minutes and 3 seconds, which I believe is one of his highest ice times on the year. And then against the Rangers, he was at 25 minutes, 40 seconds. Against the Carolina Hurricanes, he was 24 minutes, 55 seconds. And then against the Red Wings, he was at 27 minutes and 39 seconds. I think I missed a team in there. So he's basically averaging between 25 minutes and 26 minutes a game. We should mention, Dustin Byfuglien played more than any other player last year. He averaged 27 minutes and 27 seconds. So now that Trouba is coming back into the lineup, and this might seem like a pretty obvious question, because his ice time will go down when Trouba's back into the lineup. Trouba's your top pairing defenseman, so you expect his ice time to go down. Are you at all concerned that Buff is playing too much and that he might wear down going into the playoffs, or am I asking a stupid question?
Well, based on the way he's playing right now, it may come across as a bit of a stupid question, and because the truth is he's just been playing so well. So, I mean, it's shocking because this, in my mind, and it seems like what a lot of people are looking at right now, is that Dustin Byfuglien is playing his best hockey that for sure of the year right now is. So to me, obviously I don't really think it's a stupid question, because it's interesting because, you know, it's always a question we always ask is how many minutes are too many minutes for a guy to play before you start to wear him down and you have to worry about that. But the reality is that, I mean, right now he and Enstrom, to me, are your top. Well, obviously you can't leave off Josh Morrissey from that list, but the way Enstrom and Byfuglien are playing together, that pairing has been so good. You have to give them the minutes if they're available. And the truth is, I think what Jacob Trouba will do when he comes back into the lineup will allow Tyler Myers to kind of form kind of a more, what's the word I'm looking for? Just a more, less substantial role, which I think fits his the nature of the way he plays the game, I think, better. So I think you've got Byfuglien playing big minutes. You'll have Trouba eating up big minutes. You have Tyler Myers taking a decent amount of minutes. And again, you'll see that number come down. Like, we're not expecting, obviously, Jacob Trouba to come back and play until after the road trip ends. So there's still a few more games there where Byfuglien's minutes will still be up high, and he'll be the most, you know, the highest of all the defensemen. But the reality is that I think once Jacob Trouba comes back and those numbers go down, it'll be better, not because I don't think Byfuglien is capable of playing them. I think it's a function of, as you said, as you want to make sure this guy is rested, because you need him in theory or in practice or in planning to be available for a long playoff run.
Andrew, are you concerned that Buff is playing too much? I mean, we know that he can play a lot. He can play 24 minutes, 26 minutes. If he needs to play 30 minutes, he'll play 30 minutes. But as we get closer to the playoffs, don't you think that, you know, you want to cut his ice time back a little bit and keep him a little bit fresher for the playoffs?
I think you do, but you also want to roll with your hot hand too right now. Just like Dave was saying, I mean, he's been so good over the last 20 games or so. And this is also a guy who's used to playing, you know, over the past, what, 5 seasons with the Jets, almost 30 minutes, what it seems like for a lot of games. So I'm sure if you ask him, too, he won't be too disappointed with the ice time that he's getting. And, no, I mean, I love the play of Dustin Byfuglien lately. I think the ice is good for him. I think it's good for the team right now. Like I said, he's been a pretty good player lately.
Yeah, and, you know, to me, the key thing is that his risk-reward has been mitigated somewhat, and he's making really smart decisions. You don't see him making those really, like, and again we're not seeing Dustin Byfuglien do his usual around the net with one hand on the stick, one hand blocking the defenseman, but at the same time he really has minimized the number of times he's jumping in the play. And when he does do the jump in the play, as we saw last week, you know, oftentimes he's doing it at the right time. He's making that pinch when he knows that he's got someone back covering for him. So we're seeing a lot less risk in his game, and I think that the reward is paying out in that he's being able to take advantage of those opportunities that are presenting themselves. But again, like I said, there's a lot more smarter decisions And in terms of risk, again, like I said, he's mitigated it significantly. So to me right now, he's playing very smart hockey in addition to very good hockey, but he's very smart with the game he's been playing. So I think the Jets have really benefited from Dustin Byfuglien being able to eat up those minutes when you have a defenseman like Jacob Trouba missing from the lineup.
So the next question I have for you guys, and you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia pizza game day. Jets and Flyers, noon puck drop here on TSN Radio 1290. When Jacob Trouba returns to the lineup, and we know that it's coming soon, it's probably going to be in the next week, week and a half, that Trouba's back in the lineup, probably when the Jets are back at home.
Yeah.
It's definitely not going to happen on this road trip. When Trouba is back in the lineup, we know that Byfuglien is going to have less ice time, and he's going to have, most likely, a different D partner. So do you prefer Buff with Toby Enstrom, or do you prefer Buff with Dmitry Kulikov? We know Kulikov's not going to play this afternoon versus the Flyers. He's had a lot of success and familiarity with Toby Enstrom, but he's also really clicked with Dmitry Kulikov. So, Andrew, starting off with you, who do you like better paired up with Buff, or does it really matter?
I would rather go with Enstrom, I think. Just, you know, those are two guys that have been playing together for quite some time. Maybe not so much this year at the beginning of the year anyways, but they, I don't know, they just mesh well together. I think, you know, Toby seems to be a guy who usually wants to play it safe when he's playing with Byfuglien for the most part. You know, he's just a first pass type of guy. You know, he's not usually rushing up the ice too often. But no, I'd like to see Enstrom and Buff stay together. And then, you know, when Kulikov is healthy and ready, I'd like to see him go back with Myers.
And, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to Dmitry Kulikov, who has switched from the left side to the right side. We saw Tucker Pullman do that earlier in the season.
Ben Chiarot now, too.
And Ben Chiarot has been doing that as well. So there's always the chance that you see Ben Chiarot with Dustin Byfuglien. I mean, there are a lot of combinations. Dustin Byfuglien is kind of, you know, that player that, you know, you never really have to worry about who you put with him, right? And we know that the top pair, once Jacob Trouba comes back, is going to be Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba. I mean, that's been your top shutdown pair all year. So, Dave, this afternoon, what do you think the D pairings are going to be with Kulikov out of the lineup? And going forward, when the Jets are healthy, when Trouba's back, how do you see the D pairings shaping up?
So today I anticipate it'll be the way they did it. It'll be Myers and Morrissey. I think it'll be Byfuglien and Enstrom. And I think Joe Morrow goes in on that left side, and they switch Ben Chiarot over to the right for today's game. And I think moving forward, I'm of the same mind as Andrew. I would keep Byfuglien and Enstrom together. I would keep Kulikov and Myers as your third pairing, and obviously Morrissey and Trouba as your top pairing. And to me, it's worked well for you all season long. You know, there's some talk about Ben Chiarot staying in the lineup. But I don't see who he's staying in over. So, I mean, maybe him and Dmitry Kulikov are interchangeable, but I don't know if you want to have $4.3 million sitting on the bench, or up in the press box with us, I should say. You know, Dmitry Kulikov's game, I thought, was pretty good earlier in the season. I think he's kind of hit a bit of a rough patch over the last little bit. I don't think he's been playing as crisply as we'd seen earlier in the year, where he had been meshing fairly well with Tyler Myers. So, you know, maybe he gets a little bit of rest and gets ready to kind of get going again when he's ready to be back in the lineup. We're not entirely sure what his injury is, obviously. All we were told after the game was that it was cramping. And then Paul Maurice just said there was no real update. He's just kind of day-to-day right now. So we'll see. But again, like, to me, you keep Morrow and Chiarot as that third pair, and then you've just got everything else kind of established. And you know, the guy who's unheralded and the guy who doesn't probably merits a lot of conversation but really doesn't get it is Josh Morrissey. I mean, and we've talked about Josh Morrissey, and, you know, we've watched a lot of his hockey when he was in the AHL and now in the NHL, and it's just really is unbelievable the amount of pain and this guy takes when he blocks like 100 shots in a game. He's just such a smart player. He makes good passes. He makes good decisions defensively. I mean, Josh Morrissey really deserves a lot of credit for how good the Jets defense, to me, has been playing over the stretch.
I agree with you 100%, and I imagine Andrew also agrees about Josh Morrissey. I think if Kevin Cheveldayoff had the potential or the opportunity, he'd probably sign him to 15 years as opposed to 8 years. Guys, we're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by James O'Brien of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
6:30 in the morning. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I think we're still awake, right?
Somewhat.
We're up.
Boys?
Somewhat awake.
We're awake?
Yeah. Getting there.
It's going to get easier as the show progresses. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by James O'Brien of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and Roto World. Good morning, James, and thanks for getting up very early with us.
Absolutely.
And it's not as early where you are. You're in Fredericton, New Brunswick, so it's like it's almost the afternoon there, right?
Yeah, before I moved here, I didn't realize that North America went an hour later than Eastern time. So that was an education for me. It's 8:30 here.
Nonetheless, James, we really appreciate you coming on with us this morning. James, I wanted to start off by asking you about the news that came out on Wednesday, the Carolina Hurricanes announcing that Ron Francis was moving from the position of general manager to president of hockey operations. First of all, how surprised were you by that news, and how quickly do you think we're going to see the Hurricanes name a new GM?
Well, I was extremely surprised. I actually wrote a post earlier that day, or the day before maybe, about Paul Maurice comparing Paul Stastny to Ron Francis, obviously as a player. And at no point did I say, I think Paul Stastny will eventually become a GM who gets shockingly fired to a different position. Since I guess he's technically, he got the Glenn Saylor treatment to an extent. As far as finding a new GM, that's tough to say. I mean, they don't have any real deadline as far as being in the 2017-2018 season, because there's no trade deadline to deal with anymore. There really aren't any major decisions for the Hurricanes. So they can certainly take their time and see. You know, I think in their case, they might want to see what happens in Toronto with Lou Lamoriello and Kyle Dobis, among some other situations. There's also been reports about them looking at the Kings' assistant GM. So I imagine they'd probably wait at least somewhat into the playoffs or early or right after the end of the regular season for some of those guys that maybe wouldn't be available in season.
By the way, James, if you want to apply to be the Hurricanes GM, I'll send you the link.
Yeah, I've been a really good fantasy hockey GM, so I think I got it. Especially after seeing some of the moves that have been made around the NHL, there was a time I thought the league was getting smarter, and then Bergevin and Chiarelli have really bolstered my confidence. So I'm feeling pretty good. I think I'll nail the interview.
So, you know, James, sticking out, we're now going to the Blue Jackets. John Tortorella had some interesting comments about daydreaming about the offseason. Now, number one, what did you think he meant by that? And do you think it maybe worked because somehow this team, which looked like they were sliding out of it, have now won three in a row?
They've actually won four in a row.
Sorry.
They won last night. He was saying that, I've been really hard on these guys. He, you know, in Tortorella fashion, he used a few expletives too. Mm-hmm. He said somewhat similar things in the past, but this is a little more direct. He's actually, he's pretty much good for a great quote once a month. I don't know if that really sent any sort of message because I don't think he was calling out Seth Jones, who's having the best season of his career. And Seth Jones has been him and Werenski have been a big part of the last few wins. But it can't hurt, you know, give it a shot. I think it was the Avalanche a couple of years ago that it got out that the players were already making plans to go to Vegas. And I don't know if it was Patrick Waugh or not, but someone got wind of it and was very angry. I'll have to double check that later and make a note on Twitter if I find out, but, so we've seen before where teams can get shamed, but it sort of sounded like the comments of a team that'd be totally out of the playoffs instead of one that's even before the four-game winning streak, at least in the bubble or in the fringe.
You know, James, you don't have to tell us about John Tortorella comments. Ezzy was once the recipient of a John Tortorella post-game what was it, a death stare? Is that what you would call it?
Well, what happened was when Torts was coaching the Rangers, I didn't realize that they always only had one assistant coach on the bench. So I thought that one of the assistant coaches was maybe sick. So I asked him after the game.
Which they had won.
Which the Rangers had won. And Tortorella looked at me and said, "What the hell kind of question is that?"
Oh, man.
So, yes, I have felt Torts' wrath, James.
Yeah, that has to be an incredibly humiliating experience.
Oh, yeah, I was humiliated for sure. Yeah.
James, I just want to switch you.
He probably blasted just about everyone in the media at least once.
Yeah, I think it's a rite of passage. If you haven't been blasted by John Tortorella, then you really haven't come of age in media.
It's like a hockey bar mitzvah.
Hey, James, I just wanted to switch over to the Dallas Stars here for a second. This is a team that's in the offseason. You know, people were expecting some pretty big things with the signings that they had in Ben Bishop, and one of them also being Martin Hanzel, who I thought would be a pretty good depth piece at the center position. What can you tell us about him and his season so far this year?
Well, his season is over. He's going to have back surgery one of these days. Maybe he already has, and whatever the case may be, they're looking at like a 6 to 7 month window of recovery. And honestly, even that might be optimistic. You know, you get back surgery with his wear and tear already, and the fact that he's 6'6", I mean, 240 pounds. He might not ever be the same. And sadly, he's been a guy who's had injury problems. Obviously, not to the same scale of back surgery, but throughout his career, to the point where I kind of make him akin to a Marian Gaborik or an Alex Hemsky. You know, they kind of had to see it coming a little bit. I'm sure they were optimistic that he played 70 games in his last season between the Coyotes and the Wild. But, with Bishop, obviously, that's a bigger deal, and he's been solid. So, shockingly, Kari Lehtinen actually has a better save percentage by a small amount this season, and a lot of people kind of looked at Lehtinen as being at the end of his rope. The Stars are fine. They won a big game against the Ducks last night, but they're not quite with the addition of Ken Hitchcock, they've slowed the puck down a lot this season.
We're joined by James O'Brien of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and Roto World on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. James, I want to move out west and ask you about the Minnesota Wild. They won again last night, 5-2 over the Vancouver Canucks. They've won three games in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They're most likely not going to catch the Winnipeg Jets. They're 6 points behind the Jets, and the Jets have a game in hand on the Wild. So it looks like the Wild are kind of locked into that third spot in the Central Division. Eric Staal scores another goal yesterday. He's up to 37 goals on the year. In your opinion, when you look at this Minnesota Wild team, is this just a quiet team that's doing very well that nobody seems to be talking about, considering how well the Nashvilles and the Winnipegs of the world are doing right now?
I agree, yeah. And the Central's just really brimming with quality teams, because even the Stars in a seven-game series, I wouldn't exactly be dismissing them. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. They've been hot for a while now. It seems like Dubnyk, who had a little bit of early season struggles, is starting to get on track. Eric Staal, I can't believe that he's a point per game with 37 goals after some of the struggles he had, some of his bad luck. But that line with Zucker and Granlund is really dynamite. So they sort of have that, you know, even though they don't quite have like the sexy names of a, you know, some of the other, even the Stars or the Jets. You know, you look beyond that and they have some nice players. Maybe part of the reason they're picking up is because Parise, while not explosive, has at least given them another weapon. They get a lot of scoring from their defense. But, you know, you look at a seven-game series, yeah, I still wouldn't give them the edge over the Jets, but it's amazing. You look almost every spot in the West right now. Maybe not the Kings anymore, although, I mean, they have a plus 29 goal differential in the season. There really aren't a lot of soft spots in the West this season. I think it's been a big bounce back for the Central Division, and there's still some other competent teams. So I'd still put the Wild, you know, sort of in that second or third rung, but they're not a team to be dismissed, even though people are sort of bored with their, you know, they've had the season 3 or 4 years in a row now. So I think that's part of the reason people aren't that excited.
Well, James, another team that people probably shouldn't be discounting because they've managed to maintain their position and probably a team that nobody wants to play are the Anaheim Ducks. What have your thoughts so far about this Anaheim Ducks team, which is kind of, I suspect nobody wants to play them in the first round?
Yeah, they're strange because they've, you know, a big chunk of the season they weren't at full strength. Ryan Getzlaf is on fire right now, and he makes that line dangerous, and it kind of revives Corey Perry. John Gibson has been a pretty close to elite goalie for much of his career, and I think maybe that slipped under the radar a bit because of his early battles with Frederick Anderson, where both of them were splitting starts. They've got a few weapons. I'm not crazy about Randy Carlyle as a coach. I think he deserves credit for having them play pretty well last season and hang in there this season. But I wonder in a 7-game series if that might rear its head. They don't have the greatest depth beyond that top line, though. I do like their defense. But in the framework of a great West, the one thing is that Pacific Division, I could see the Ducks making a run just because everyone's sort of at the same level.
James, the Anaheim Ducks also have two goaltenders in John Gibson and Ryan Miller, both with identical numbers this year. Both have a 2.49 GAA and a .926 save percentage. Is Ryan Miller, is he the type of goalie that can still bring the Ducks far in the playoffs, given they do make it if something were to happen to John Gibson?
You know, I have my doubts, but you're right. He's played 24 games at that level, too. He looked great last night against the Stars. The Stars dominated much of that game, and it wasn't really until those power plays that they were able to score any goals against him. I thought, you know, Miller, for a lot of his career, has been reliably average. You know, sort of aside from that 2010 year where he won a silver medal in the Vezina, he's mainly been reliable rather than great. So it's been interesting to see him have a truly outstanding season where maybe he benefits from that backup role of maybe getting selective matchups aside from last night and covering the end of a back-to-back. I wouldn't necessarily trust him at the level of I would as a true starter, but there really aren't that many teams that have a backup of his level, especially the way he's playing. So I'd say no, but it's possible.
We're joined by James O'Brien of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. James, earlier you mentioned, you know, that Western Conference playoff race and the LA Kings right now holding that last wild card spot up 1 point on the Colorado Avalanche. And we focus a lot on the Western Conference here in Winnipeg. But you look at that Eastern Conference, the Florida Panthers, 7-0-1 in their last 8 games. They've got games in hand on both the Devils and Blue Jackets. If you were a betting man, who are you putting money on in the Eastern Conference to get those last two wild card spots?
I would lean a little bit towards the Panthers and the Blue Jackets. And for one reason, and it's not season-wide, but the Devils are about to enter a 6-game road trip against a lot of West teams, with I think the exception being the Penguins closing out that road trip. And even though they sort of get paid back for those troubles after that stretch, I feel like that's the sort of run that could derail you, especially since even though Taylor Hall's dragging them to the finish line, they've only won 4 of their last 10 games. So you look at the Panthers, the one thing is that even though the games in hand are, a really good thing to have, those other two teams do have those extra points banked in the case of the Devils, 3, and with the Blue Jackets, 4. But I think that's enough room for a hot Panthers team to catch one of them. And I'm leaning a bit toward the Devils. It's nice to have those star players, but the Blue Jackets have a few resources. And now that the Panthers split up their top two lines to have a little more scoring diversity, they've been a lot more dangerous. And, you know, a lot of that's also Roberto Luongo coming back. But that team, even though they had a frustrating offseason, they've been outstanding lately. You know, certainly with the tragedy in Parkland, we've seen sports teams in the past rally around really awful instances like that and have big runs, not just in hockey, but, you know, in the NFL and other sports. So, I don't think that's a big factor, but every little thing can kind of coalesce when you're on a hot streak like that. So, you know, it's going to be close, and I wouldn't totally count out the Devils. You know, it'd be really sad to see Taylor Hall miss the playoffs again after how close they're getting. But if I had to bet, yeah, I'd say Blue Jackets and Panthers.
Yeah, I think I might have to agree with you, even though I'm a Devils fan. The way the Panthers are playing right now, pretty incredible. And the Columbus Blue Jackets are pretty hot, as you mentioned, winners of four games in a row. Seth Jones is, I think, entering the Norris Trophy conversation, if I must say so. He's been really good this year, so it's going to be an incredible race. The Carolina Hurricanes are sticking around. We know the Islanders are pretty much out of it now, but it's going to be between the Blue Jackets, Devils, and Panthers in the East, and it's going to be very fun to watch. James O'Brien is with NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and Roto World. James, we really appreciate you joining us this morning, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Have a great one.
All right, thanks again, James. Let's head to break. When we come back, the Jets and Flyers puck drop noon today on TSN Radio 1290. We're going to preview that game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
There's Couturier watching now as Giroux gets in the puck. Couturier in the shot. He scores!
Ten to seven in the morning. Welcome back to the IC Hockey Show. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk, Andrew Brown. Drew Mandel is off this week. He'll be back next week. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia. Online at zappiagroup.com. Dave, I'll tell you this much. Frank is very happy that the Jets acquired Paul Stastny. He was calling for weeks for the Jets to acquire a center to play with Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers. And if you follow Frank on Twitter, and you should, he's been very vocal about how much he likes Paul Stastny. So shout out to Frank Zappia, good friend of the show. Winnipeg Jets, Philadelphia Flyers, puck drop noon from Wells Fargo Center in the city of brotherly love. This Philadelphia Flyers team, guys, has been almost a tale of two teams. Mm-hmm. Almost like the Winnipeg Jets last year, Jekyll and Hyde. The Philadelphia Flyers lose 10 games earlier in the season. That was back in November. They've lost their last four games. I believe they're 0-5-1 in their last six, if I'm not mistaken. Prior to that, the Flyers won six games in a row. And this Philadelphia Flyers team right now is sitting in third place in the Metropolitan Division. This Flyers team obviously is led by Claude Giroux. He's having an MVP-like season. What are your thoughts, Dave, on this Flyers team this year and what the Jets should expect in an afternoon game that sometimes can be a little bit sluggish?
Yeah, you know what? I think you hit it on the head, Ez, when you said it's a tale of two teams, because everybody was calling for Dave Haxtell's head. You know, they wanted him fired when the team was in that big losing streak, and he got the vote of confidence from management, and obviously the team turned it around and they went on a bit of a run. And that Metro Division has just been so bizarre. I mean, think about it. We were talking about, are the Pittsburgh Penguins done? And now they're atop the division, and Columbus, who looked like they were going to run away with it, have now fallen to fourth in division, and nobody's even talking about the Washington Capitals. It seems like that's a team nobody ever talks about anymore.
Well, they're going to lose in the first round, so who cares, right?
Well, that's what people say, but, you know, maybe this is the year that they don't do that simply because nobody is talking about them. But you know what? It's a very interesting situation. You know, to me, like Wayne Simmons is a guy I've loved for years. I think he's just he brings such an interesting dynamic to a team, and this is a Phillies team that to me, is right now they're in a bit of a tailspin, and like you said, they're on a bit of a losing streak, and something obviously they need to get turned around because they are only 2 points up on Columbus. But you know, they're a tough team, and you know, right now everybody in Philly's, you know, they're feeling the love with the Super Bowl victory, and ironically enough, right after the Super Bowl, the Flyers and the 76ers and all the teams in Philadelphia are doing really well. So I think they'll get it turned around in time for the playoffs. But again, like, it's one of those kind of like up and down. It's an unusual sort of year in Philly. So the truth is, especially as we're getting closer and closer, and they've only got, I think, 14 games remaining in the season, you really have to kind of get it figured out sooner rather than later, because you don't want to be coming in to the playoffs, you know, on a downward spiral.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Guys, we should mention that Elkhorn Manitoba product Travis Sanheim was recalled by the Flyers. He's going to play this afternoon versus the Winnipeg Jets, the team that he grew up watching. I guess when he was really young, the Jets weren't in Winnipeg.
They were in
Arizona. But needless to say, he's a Manitoba boy. He will be in the lineup for the Flyers today. Andrew, my question for you is, we know the top-end talent that the Flyers have with Giroux, Voracek, Sean Couturier, Dave mentioned Wayne Simmonds, one of the best power forwards in the game, Travis Konecny, one of the best young players in the game, Nolan Patrick, second overall draft pick at the 2017 draft. But after Ivan Provorov and Shane Gostisbehere and some young prospects like Travis Sanheim, do you think this group of defensemen is good enough for the Flyers if they do get into the playoffs and end up facing either Washington or Pittsburgh in the first round?
Well, it's certainly going to be tough for them. I mean, yeah, they're top two D-men right now with Provorov and Gostisbehere. I think Gostisbehere is probably known to be a little bit more of an offensive D-man. Ivan Provorov's a really good two-way defenseman. You got a good veteran in Andrew McDonald on the second line as well. I don't think, you know, they have the best decor right now in the league, but they do have some really good defensive forwards as well that help out in that part of the game. But, I mean, Shane Gostisbehere is having a huge rebound year as well this year. I mean, I think he has 50 points or something like that in 60 games. So it'll be tough to say, I mean, if they can handle the big playoff matchups and even if they do, you know, get into the playoffs.
And we expect Peter Mrazek to be in net for the Flyers today. He was obviously acquired prior to the trade deadline from the Detroit Red Wings, and he's actually struggled for the Flyers. Mrazek was obviously sharing goaltending duties in Detroit, Dave, with Jimmy Howard, but with Brian Elliott and Michael Neuwirth going out of the lineup. Not sure if we're going to see either of those goalies before the end of the season and going into the playoffs. But
Peter, ask Anthony about that.
Exactly, and when you talk about Peter Mrazek, he's obviously, you know, had varying degrees of success in Detroit, Dave, but do you think this team is going to be able to hang on to a playoff spot? Because right now, the way they're going, I mean, you have the Columbus Blue Jackets and the New Jersey Devils in your rearview mirror.
Yeah, and again, like I said, it's one of those situations where you just can't afford to have a lull, especially at this point of the season, because for a while there, it looked like Columbus had fallen off the map. And again, you know, Coach Tortorella's comments were rather interesting about the way he was focused on his team. So you thought, okay, well, you're going to cruise in. And again, Washington's lost two in a row as well. So it's so up in the air because it's so tight. And you've got this Florida team, which everybody discounted, right? But the problem is, again, as we saw about, you know, 3 weeks ago, they had six games in hand on most of the teams that they were trying to catch. So if they went on a run, which is exactly what they did, you know, they're a team now that could, in theory, take one of those remaining spots. And right now we, you know, don't know what's obviously going to happen with New Jersey, who lost obviously to the Jets. But to me, it's a function of just you have to get the ship turned around. And Jets and Flyers always have really interesting games. And they're, you know, they're always not those high-scoring 9-8 games that we saw, a number of years back. But the fact is they always have these, like, very curious hockey games to me. I don't know why, but they always have, like, they're just very interesting. They're not usually boring hockey games when the Jets and the Flyers play. Maybe it's the Radko Gudas factor, I don't know. But the fact is that, to me, it's always been an interesting matchup between those two teams. I think they match up well. I think that the physicality is usually there, and you know there's decent speed. So I think it should be an interesting matchup between these two squads. And again, the Jets are cruising, but you know they know that they need to. They don't want to allow the Minnesota Wild to have any life, so they know that they need to keep winning and banking points. I mean, sure, in theory they've got the second spot somewhat locked up, but the fact is you don't want to ever just kind of take anything for granted. And the reality from a Jets perspective, you haven't taken anything for granted the entire season. So there's no point resting on your laurels for the last 15 games of the year, from my perspective.
And we mentioned earlier, Travis Sanheim will be in the lineup today versus the Jets for the Flyers. We don't know which defenseman is coming out for the Flyers. We're going to find out, and we'll let you know later today on the afternoon ride. We do know that Johnny Oduya is not playing for the Flyers.
And no
yes,
pizzas.
And yes, Johnny Oduya is a member of the Flyers, in case you didn't know that.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our very good friend, Anthony Sanfilippo of CrossingBroad.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
7 o'clock in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Santa Lucia pizza game day. Winnipeg Jets versus Philadelphia Flyers coming up at noon from the Wells Fargo Center. You can hear that game, of course, here on TSN Radio 1290. The afternoon ride is coming up after us at 9 o'clock in the morning. That just feels weird to say, Dave, that someone is coming up after us at 9 in the morning.
Yeah, well, 9 o'clock is usually when we're starting the show. So, I mean, that is weird.
We got Anthony Sanfilippo on the line. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Anthony Sanfilippo, one of our all-time favorite guests. He writes for CrossingBroad.com. Good morning, Anthony, and good to hear from you again.
Yeah, you know, guys, I'm not used to talking to you at this hour. this is like the shank of the evening, usually, for us people who are up until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Anthony, I don't think any of us are used to just being up doing anything at this time.
No kidding. That's absolutely correct. It's so much so that I almost forgot that you guys were calling this early.
We appreciate you coming on. This is the earliest, I promise, we will ever ask you to come on. We only usually have 2 or 3 of these shows a year. I think the last time we were on this early was back in late December when the Jets and Islanders played at noon. But we always love having you on. We've had you on since the show started back on Red River Kick FM back in 2009, and we obviously brought you on to talk about the Philly Flyers, who are in the middle of a bit of a slump right now after winning 6 games in a row. They're 0-4-1 over their last 5 games, back-to-back losses to the Boston Bruins and Pittsburgh Penguins. What's been going wrong for the Flyers as of late?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that what's been going wrong for the Flyers was also happening during their 12-game point streak when they were 10-0-2 just before this 5-game stretch. And it was just kind of masked because they were playing weaker teams and finding ways to win those games. But this has been a long-standing issue with this team. And it's a combination of things, but it's primarily the fact that they really don't have the roster depth that they need. And what I mean by that is that beyond your top line of Giroux, Couturier, and Konechny, you have Voracek on the second line, which is okay, fine. But beyond that, their offense is lacking. And beyond the top pair defense of Ivan Provorov and Shane Gostisbehere, their defense is lacking. So their second pair defense, which is Andrew McDonald and Robert Hague, is more of a third pair, but they're playing second pair minutes against better players. And their third pair of Brandon Manning and Radko Gudas are both number 7 D-men. And so they're getting abused night in, night out. The Flyers recalled Travis Sanheim yesterday from the American Hockey League, but his first 30-some games up here with the Flyers were not very good. So I think that there's an issue there. They make stupid mistakes with the puck. They struggle to get the puck out of their own zone. They turn the puck over in a neutral zone. They're not fast enough when they take shots in the offensive end that completely miss the net and then start coming back the other way. They don't have the speed to keep up with most teams, and that's why a lot of times they face odd man rushes. And finally, their goaltending without Brian Elliott is suspect. And that includes Peter Mrazek, who they traded for. He's quick on the ice from post to post, but he sits back really deep, gives up a lot of bad rebounds, and gives up goals from awkward angles as well. So they've got issues and have had issues, and they're now finally seeing them you know, rear their ugly head a little bit because they're playing a series of good teams, which continues today with the Jets.
You know, Anthony, that's a good, you know, kind of leads into my question in terms of the goaltending. What are you anticipating the goaltending looking like as they, you know, enter, if they end up holding on to that playoff spot? What would you, are we expecting those guys back, or is it going to be the Peter Mrazek show? What are you anticipating for the Flyers heading forward?
Well, you know, the team hasn't said anything recently about Brian Elliott. The last that we were told, he was, his injury was a 5 to 6 week injury, which should get him back in the lineup by the end of March. So I think ultimately that if that timetable is accurate, that he will be the guy that the Flyers go to over the last 5 or 6 games going into the final week of the regular season. And then if they hold on to the playoff spot, he will be their number one guy. I think Mrazek was a guy that they traded for in hopes that you know, he had NHL experience and he could, you know, at least stem the tide until Elliott got healthy. And if he happened to get hot, which is why the draft pick was conditional that was traded to Detroit, if he happened to get hot and play really well, then the Flyers would be willing to pay a little bit more because the guy's playing well and carrying them into the playoffs. So I think that was their gamble, and it was a gamble they had to take, in all honesty. But at the same time, they're finding out why Detroit was so anxious to get Mrazek off of their books as far as with his salary and the like. And he's no different, really, than Michael Neuwirth, who got hurt, in the sense that he's, when he's hot, he's good, and when he's not really that good.
Anthony, Johnny Oduya is a defenseman that the Flyers claimed off of waivers not too long ago. I'm just wondering, do you think there's a plan for Johnny Oduya to maybe sneak into the lineup if maybe things don't work out with Travis Sanheim or another bottom-pairing defenseman?
Well, it's interesting because he was in the lineup for a game over the week last weekend in Florida, and he played a period and a half. Did not look good in that period and a half, and then got hurt in the game and had to leave the game and has not been seen since. So the Flyers haven't really updated it, just saying it's, you know, it was a lower body injury and it's a day-to-day type thing. Haven't really given us anything new on that front. I anticipate that if they called up Sanheim, that Oduya is probably not ready to go, or maybe not even an option that they want to go with at this point. The Flyers' situation is dicey on defense. It really, really is, beyond their top pairing. So, you know, is it possible that if things continue to, you know, flounder and they fall further towards the bottom of the standings in the playoff race? Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, any potential combination is possible, especially with a veteran player getting into the lineup for bigger games. But I don't necessarily know if Oduya's got enough left in the tank to really make the difference that the Flyers need at this point.
We're joined by Anthony Sanfilippo of CrossingBroad.com on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Anthony, I remember last time we had you on, we asked you about Nolan Patrick, and you know, we're in Winnipeg. We're a Winnipeg-based hockey show. We have to ask you about Nolan Patrick. He's the golden boy. And when you look at his stats, they don't really necessarily jump out at you. He's only got 10 goals and 22 points in 59 games, but he's actually got 9 points in his last 11 games. He was on a 4-game goal streak a couple of weeks ago. How have you seen his game grow from the beginning of the season until now?
It leaps and bounds, guys. I mean, Nolan Patrick has been superb since the last time we spoke. I mean, it's almost like that conversation was what sparked it. He really has been all that the Flyers could expect of him to be since that conversation. I mean, he's kind of grown in his gameplay, in his skating, in his physicality. His confidence level has gone through the roof, and that's the biggest thing. He's playing on that second line with Voracek, and really flourishing there. He replaced Wayne Simmonds on the top power play when Simmonds was hurt, and played great. He was excellent on that power play. getting in front of the net for deflections, being able to take a pass in that slot and then get it back out for to somebody else for an even better percentage shot. So Nolan Patrick is growing up quickly before our eyes, and the Flyers fans are excited, and they all see it, right? I mean, it's not like it's just, you know, you need someone like me to tell you that this is happening. I mean, it's pretty evident, and everybody can see it. He's really played well, and there's a lot to like there. And you know, yeah, it took him a little bit longer than maybe the Flyers would have hoped. They would have hoped that he would have come in right away and been this kind of player and maybe been on the same kind of point plateau that Nico Hischier is for the Devils. But I think long-term, he's going to be as good, if not even better, than Nico Hischier in the NHL. So he's got that makeup and he's got that ability, and Flyers fans are going to be happy with that for a very long time.
You know, Anthony, one player in my mind who probably isn't getting enough recognition for what he's been able to do this season is Claude Giroux. I mean, you know, he's hitting point totals that he hasn't seen in years. He's probably going to eclipse his his high from 2011-12. His shooting percentage has doubled from what it was last year. What have you seen in Claude Giroux's game that's really just kind of jumped off the pages, number one? And number two, do you think he's not really getting the recognition around the league that he probably deserves?
Yeah, I do. I actually had a conversation prior to the Pittsburgh game with a Pittsburgh radio station and said the same thing. I really do. I mean, if the Flyers make the playoffs, even if they sneak in as the last team, to have a team that was in last place in the division and was in the midst of a 10-game losing streak, I mean, how many teams rebound from a 10-game losing streak in the NHL? It just doesn't happen. And to be the guy, the captain of that team, and have your best season you've ever had points-wise, and turn the team around and finish, you know, maybe top five in the league in scoring, which is probably where he would end up, how do you not consider him for a Hart Trophy? Not to say that he is going to win it, but he should certainly be in the conversation as one of the potential finalists, because he would be the most valuable player to his own team for sure. And then to sit there and say, well, gee, if he was that important to his team, how much impact did he have on getting them where they are, and how does that compare to other players in the league? And I certainly think that it's among the five best seasons this year, assuming he stays on this pace over the last 15 games and does what he and finishes where he's probably going to finish in points, which would be in the mid-90s. So, yeah, he's having a great year, and a lot of it is total credit to him. He stayed healthy this year, which, you know, he's the kind of guy who plays through injuries, but he hasn't really had any this year. And moving him to the wing has really helped in that regard. He gets to stay on the one side of the ice, doesn't have to skate as much, doesn't put himself at risk physically as much anymore. It's helped his whole game. It's not just his offensive game. He's actually been the best he's ever been as a defensive forward as well, which is he was always just kind of a mediocre defensive forward. If he tried, you know, he would make a play here and there, but he was never really the kind of guy who would bust it on the defensive end. And he's really done a nice job on the defensive side of the ice as well when he doesn't have the puck. So, yeah, I think it's real underrated season. And I don't throw that around lightly. I mean, I know a lot of people in Philadelphia like to, you know, praise their star players at all times, whether they deserve it or not. And I'm usually a little bit more skeptical, but I'll be honest. I honestly think that Giroux has had a year that so far that has been one to remember. It's been that kind of a season for him.
We're joined by Anthony Sanfilippo of crossingbroad.com on TSN Radio 1290.
Anthony, another player who's having a bit of a big rebound year this year is Shane Gostisbehere. This is a rookie that, or not a rookie, sorry, but a player when he was a rookie really took the league by storm. He had 46 points in 64 games, kind of regressed a little bit last year. Still had a pretty solid season, though, but this year he's putting up career-high numbers on a Philly team that has been, you know, kind of inconsistent. What have you seen from Shane Gostisbehere that's, you know, has he really elevated his game this year? Is it just playing with Ivan Provorov, who's now maybe a little bit more comfortable in the league?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You just said the first thing I was going to say, but it's probably a combination of multiple things. I mean, I think playing with Provorov really has made a difference. I mean, Gostisbehere got off to a good start, and he was not playing with Provorov. He was at the time playing with Robert Haig on the second pairing. But that was the beginning of the year when the Flyers were playing a different kind of system. They were playing a kind of a style where they would push the play at all times, and defensemen were getting active in the offensive zone. And so Gostisbehere was putting up points right away, even if they weren't getting back and playing defense like they should have. And then they made a change in the way they were playing to be a more defensive-minded team, to try and help the defense, because we talked about their depth issues there. And the change that was made along with that is putting Gostisbehere with Provorov, so that they really put their two best scoring defensemen together in hopes of getting them more ice time and forcing them to drive the play, as opposed to have to play a lot more defense when the teams are coming at them. So putting him with Provorov really kind of helped as well, in the sense that it allows him to be more freewheeling, more offensively minded, because Provorov is such a good player. And basically he doesn't have to think out there, Gostisbehere. He could just go out and play his game and get up in the zone, you know, in the offensive zone, get good shots. He's got a great shot from the point. And he gets a lot of assists that way. And that's why he's among the top defensive scorers in the NHL. I wouldn't put him into any kind of NARS trophy conversation. I saw something on TV here because of, I guess, again, everybody just assumes that your best defensemen are the people who are those that score the most. And so they were talking about him as potential NARS trophy. I wouldn't go there. I mean, he still has some deficiencies on the defensive side of things. But he's definitely got the skill to be a consistent 50 to 60-point scorer from the blue line for the Flyers. And that's kind of rare in the NHL as well. So, yeah, he's having a really nice season for them. I still think Provorov impresses me far more. And he's got fewer points, but I think he impresses me overall as a defenseman far more than Gostisbehere. And I think Provorov ultimately will be considered one of the top defensemen in the NHL. People forget he's still only 21 years old. And so I think that will be the guy that we're going to be talking about more long-term. But I think Gostisbehere is certainly a guy that the Flyers will be happy to have as their number two guy for a lot of years to come as well.
Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Philadelphia Flyers for crossingbroad.com. He's one of our all-time favorite guests. Anthony, when are you coming back to the Peg?
Oh, gee, we gotta figure that out. I mean,
are we coming to Philly?
I would prefer that. And I'll show you guys around down here.
Well, we were there for the draft, Anthony. So I think it's your turn to come. It's your turn to come to Winnipeg.
Yeah, I know you guys were here for the draft, but we didn't hang out like we were supposed to when you guys came here for the draft.
Good point.
There were some extenuating circumstances that kind of prevented that. So
we lost Ezzy that day.
What's that?
No, it was Drew's fault. He had us on a very tight schedule.
That's true. It was Drew's fault.
Yeah. So I think we have to, rework that so that you guys get to really experience the grittiness of Philadelphia through my eyes when you come here. Then I'll come back to Winnipeg.
Okay.
I'll tell you this much, Anthony. Any opportunity I have to come back to Philadelphia, I will, because it's a beautiful city. Obviously, one of the greatest sports towns in North America. So, that might happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, for a while there, it was looking like there was a potential that, maybe these two teams could have met for a Stanley Cup final, and now I think there's only one of these two teams who have a real chance to make it to the Stanley Cup final, and it's not the one in Philadelphia, so.
We'll try to get out to Philly next time the Jets are in town, maybe next year.
Yeah, it'd be great. I'd love to have you guys down here.
Anthony, thanks so much, for coming on the show with us early this morning.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Appreciate you guys having me on.
All right. Take care, Anthony. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, Zane Kalemba was on the afternoon ride yesterday. We're going to play that interview next. He was the emergency backup goaltender for the Jets on Thursday night versus the Devils. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Almost halfway through the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg, Andrew Brown, Dave Manuk. It's a Santa Lucia pizza game day here on TSN Radio 1290. Jets and Flyers at noon from Wells Fargo Center. Now we're going to play the interview from yesterday's afternoon ride with Zane Kalemba, who is the emergency backup goalie for the Jets on Thursday night versus the Devils. Here's that interview.
Zane, what's up? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on the air. It's a pleasure.
What take us back, Zane, to first hearing that your services may be required?
Yeah, I got a text from Steve Pellegrini with the Devils about 1:30 Eastern. He's like, just making sure you're ready, because usually I just show up at the rink about 5:30 with my gear and have my suit on, my street clothes. He said, just be ready today because Hutchinson's flying in and his flight might be delayed. So it was a pretty, I mean, you always think it's going to happen, but already, like, you never think it's going to happen to you. So pretty interesting story. I actually played with Hutchinson in Reading in the East Coast League back in 2011. So we were probably goalie partners for about a month. So pretty cool.
So, Zane, how do you get on the list, the short list for emergency goaltending duties in New Jersey?
So this year there's a new league rule, I guess. So the Devils actually held a tryout. I guess they had people apply online. There's probably like 400 applicants, and then they picked based on your resume, they picked 15 guys to come to the on-ice tryout. So it was actually a tryout for it before the year, and they picked a few guys. And I made it through for the on-ice trial.
Zane, is there ever a thought, I guess, that you are going to get that call? It's not quite like the volunteer fireman. You know that person's going to get the call. But what about for you and the others?
Yeah, I mean, you always see the stories where, you know, people get injured and they need somebody quickly. So you always just kind of have that in the back of your mind that might happen one day. And, you know, for me, it was... It was a big week. I actually got married on Saturday, and then obviously last night got the call from the Jets. So it was a big week for me.
Well, congratulations. That certainly does qualify as a big week. We're talking with Zane Kalemba, who was last night's emergency backup goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290. So, Zane, you get the call. You make it down with your gear. What's it like walking into an NHL dressing room? I guess at least you did play with Blake Wheeler in Green Bay as a junior, so you did at least know one familiar face.
Yeah, I knew Blake, obviously, from the 2004 season. And he was a huge help. He welcomed me, in the locker room and, said, like, come hang out. There's an extra stall. And the guys were very friendly and all nice guys. So it was a great experience. And just a special thanks to Blake for helping me out and helping me through it. But now it was just an overall awesome experience. And, I actually think I have a couple Princeton classmates listening from the Winnipeg area. I just want to give a shout-out to Mark Magnowski and Tyler Beecholder, who are listening right now.
Nice!
Zane, what comes with the PTO? I mean, obviously, there's some money involved, but dinners? Like, do you hold out for things, or is it just a standard signature?
What about the jersey?
Yeah, I think they said they're going to mail me the jersey, which is awesome. I love the color scheme, and they're going to mail it to me because they still need it in case... a similar situation comes for the rest of the road trip. I got a couple hats and some new swag and a t-shirt. So just, I'm a huge Devils fan, but right now the Jets are on the top of my list.
Well, you're a former Winnipeg Jet now, Zane. I mean, you have to, go with the team that signed you.
Nah, exactly. And I actually lived in Manitoba for a season too, playing with the Flint Flon Bombers. So there's a little connection there as well.
I wanted to ask you about that. We were going through the down the rabbit hole that is Hockey DB, and we noticed that the year after you played in Green Bay with Blake Wheeler, you played 47 games for the Flint Flon Bombers at that time in the Saskatchewan League. But of course, Flint Flon in northern Manitoba. What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was actually one of the funnest years of my career, I think. Just a huge hockey town. And really, I didn't know anything about it, being an American goalie. I got cut my 20-year-old year from Green Bay, and they flew me up there, and, I was already committed to play at Princeton the year after, so I just needed a place to end up, and I ended up in Flin Flon, where I played with Tyler Beechel. So... basically, we had an awesome year. We made the playoffs, and I think we won the Survivor Series against Melfort in seven games. So that was just a great experience for me.
Zane, you're not far removed from playing competitive hockey and serious hockey, so you'd have the goaltending equipment that would be legal with the National Hockey League.
Yeah, I still had my gear from the Manchester Storm of the British Hockey League, where I played two years ago. So I'm not in the top shape like I was back then, but I still managed to get a couple minutes in the warm up and get a good sweat.
Now, Zane, we've got a number of listeners that are firing us questions. This is the best one, though, from our friend Mike Wynn. Have you discussed with the Jets? I mean, if the Jets go on to win the Stanley Cup, do you get a ring?
I haven't thought that far ahead, but, you know, it'd be nice if they sent me a little gift. I don't know if that's required or not, but that would be awesome.
Is this going to create cap problems for the Jets, do you think?
I don't think so, but for a few teams, I think they do have to sign an amateur tryout. Because I played a professional game, they have to sign me to a professional tryout agreement, but there's some goalies on that emergency list for certain teams that do have cap space issues.
And I guess they have to pay you the American money too, right? All the players get paid in American money.
Yep, that's a U.S. dollar.
So are you getting like a day's worth of a minor salary? Is there a special amount that's just given to a guy on a PTO?
Yeah, I think it's the standard, just the $500 for the day. That's what the PTO contract entails. So
you have to invoice them?
Not a bad bonus.
Is there an invoice in that, or do you just basically get an envelope of cash when you show up?
Yeah, it's like it's how they get per diem, I guess. I went to the Buffalo Sabres main training camp in 2010 with Tyler Myers was actually there. But the same thing, they just give you like the cash when you arrive at camp, like they would give you per diem.
So there's a good dinner, you'd have the good dinner, I guess, before the game, but even maybe another dinner after.
Not exactly. Definitely want to get that proverbial cup of coffee, though. So that was now it's a Keurig machine. It's not the old pot of coffee.
Zane, man, this has been great having you on the program. And even cooler, you got a couple old pals from your Princeton days listening here in the Peg. Your name was everywhere on social media here yesterday. And Winnipeg Jet fans will remember Zane Kalemba. Thanks so much for joining us here.
Thanks,
and
Zane.
Congratulations on your time with the Winnipeg Jets.
Thank you very much. I also just want to say hello to my wife who's listening. She's been my wife for a few days. But hello, Nicole. Thank you for supporting me and coming to the game yesterday.
Yeah, how's the 5 days been? It's been a good week.
Yeah, we're actually getting ready to leave for our honeymoon on Wednesday. We're going to Spain, so it's going to be another exciting week for me.
Well, now she knows you have the $500, so oops.
Yeah, keep the phone on. You never know if any goalies will be needed while you're on the road.
That's right. I'm always ready.
Thanks, man.
Thanks,
Zane. That was the replay of the Zane Kalemba interview from yesterday's afternoon ride with Huss and Rick. What an awesome interview. My favorite part of that interview is when Zane just casually throws in, by the way, I got married on Saturday, so it was kind of a big week for me. So incredible. Love that interview that Huss and Rick did with Zane.
I'm just curious to see when we see our first Zane Kalemba jersey in the Bell MTS place when the Jets are playing.
I hope we see him.
I think we will.
I hope we see that jersey. An absolutely great story for a guy that hasn't even been playing a high level of hockey the last couple of years. They mentioned in their interview he played for the Flin Flon Bombers and obviously is a Princeton grad. So a great story and a fantastic interview that Huss and Rick did yesterday. We're going to head to break now, guys. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Tampa Bay Lightning insider Eric Erlandson. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.